Hello, and welcome back to episode 3 of Stanima. This is a Survivor Panama rewatch podcast we're doing in the Survivor off-season, brought to you by the Bitter Jurors Podcast Network. Just a reminder, I'm not the only thing happening on the Bitter Jurors Network. It's funny to call it the Bitter Jurors Network, it's just me, Sam, and Derek. But this summer, Sam and Derek are continuing to do their Legend of Korra coverage, so if you're into Legend of Korra, keep an eye out for that. I know they just put out the first episode of that coverage for the summer, and I can only assume it will keep coming. But we're not here to talk about Korra. I've never seen Legend of Korra. I'm a bad lesbian. We're here to talk about episode 3 of Survivor Panama, Crazy Fights, Snake Dinners. Actually, a great episode title. I don't believe it's said in the episode, but it is a great one. So we'll see how me and my guest can top it. This episode aired on February 16th, 2006. And again, I could not talk about Panama alone. My fiance asked me, do you have a guest tonight? And I was like, could you imagine if I just like talk to myself about Panama? And from her perspective, that's what's happening because she just hears me. But I'm not talking to myself tonight. My guest today is Naomi Calhoun. And Naomi is the host, producer, editor, CEO, CFO, camera woman, and social media strategist for the Mike White endorsed podcast, Mike White Was Robbed. And I did not have to record a second take of that introduction. Welcome, Naomi.
Hi, I'm so excited for Bitter Jurors off-season, which I can only assume means 3 people tweeting from one Twitter account constantly about things I never would have thought of about Survivor when Survivor was not on the air.
I will say, I think so. I definitely don't tweet as much as I should on that account. I cannot take credit for the incredible content Sam and Derek put out. Sometimes they tweet things and I see it, I'm like, who said that? Because it's incredible. Their minds blow me away.
Yeah, it's enviable sometimes what they post, and you're just like, I can't, the deep recesses of their brain that they have access to then just make sort of like a hi gay joke about Survivor is incredible. Yes.
So Naomi, what is your Survivor story? Are you day one fan? What is your journey? And then if you could talk a bit about where Panama sits for you. You know, was the season you loved, season you grew to love? You know, what's the tea?
So it's actually coming back. My OG reality TV love, Extreme Home Makeover, coming back for a new season.
I got to go to the filming of one. They filmed near me in Mesa, Arizona, and we went to go see it, and Ty Pennington waved at my family.
What a life. If I was like 10 years old and I heard that, like if we were in class together, I would have just been like, why does God hate me? I didn't like, I would be so mad because I wanted that so badly for myself. No, so my family, not a Survivor family. The loyal Naomi heads will know, not a Survivor family. In fact, I did not start watching Survivor until I'm always really bad at the year I moved to New York City, but 2016. And now that seems like a ways away, right? That's, wow, 10 years, whatever. We're not going to think about that. But I didn't start watching until my ex-boyfriend broke up with me. And I had an internship that I didn't have anything to do at. And I said to my friends, what should I do? And they said, you should watch Survivor. So I watched Survivor when it was available on Hulu. And I just plowed through the seasons. And I was a really big fan of early Survivor, especially this era of like the late single digits to the early teens, I think is such a great, interesting portion of Survivor that's not talked about often enough. I think things like Vanuatu and the things that fall to sort of the lower tier, you know, our queen Gia Worthy and her Fiji fever, I think they deserve recognition because they have a lot of interesting components of society that I think Survivor was meant to show. I don't think Survivor always understood what they were showing, but it is certainly fascinating. So Panama was something I remember watching and just having to message my friends and be like, is this Shane guy like, did he have a mental collapse after this show? What, you know, because I'm like, and of course when my friends watch it, they were children, so they don't know. They don't know what happened to Shane Powers after 2006, but I was like, what happened? So certainly a lot to process. But yeah, I didn't start watching until much later than everyone else.
Gotcha. So did you pick this episode for a particular reason? Is there a particular moment in this episode?
I think for me, you know, I know a lot of the big episodes and there's a lot to talk about, but there's also a lot of gross feelings in those episodes. Mm-hmm. Really the only, you know, there's a future moment that involves a wet pair of jean shorts, and that's always one of my favorite Panama moments. But I am actually somebody who I really, when I think about all the standout castaways in my mind, there are a couple people who I found to be really fascinating characters in this season, and that includes Misty and Astro Dan. And I really wanted an episode where those people were, like, where we could really see them and see mm-hmm. them shine. And I really like early Survivor, like early pre-merge Survivor. I think, you know, a classic two tribe. Wow, a classic purple and orange tribe season of Survivor. Who would have predicted? But I just was drawn to the characters all still existing, and also a lot of who's a lot of. There was a man named Austin on this season.
Like Nick? Still too. Nick. Who is Nick?
Bro, you know how like Rob did that thing where he named every Survivor contestant?
Yeah.
It's moments like this where I see like a Nick and I'm like, how the absolute F was I going to say this man's name? If I, you know, guns in my head, I'd be dead. Like, you know,
exactly,
thank you.
Exactly. So what is it about? I'm curious. So Misty, obviously, ripped to a legend. What is it about Misty for you?
Well, you know, I think because Parvati is after this season,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
They're looking for that Parvati, I think. They're looking for, like, and, you know, obviously, television and the world was so horny in 2006. So incredibly horny. And I think that all these women are so beautiful on the younger tribe. And also, I think the women on the older women tribe, and I have big quotes around that, are also really beautiful. But they're looking for that, like, absolute bombshell to put on TV. And Misty's also like a missile engineer.
Missile Misty. Like,
what the absolute hell is this woman doing on the show? And they never talk about it really, right? Mm-hmm. They never acknowledge it, and then she's gonzo. So I was always just fascinated by like, well, there goes a character I wish I knew more about. And she was definitely one of those people for me.
No, yeah, I totally agree that Misty is someone like you can totally envision if she didn't go here, she could be like a major star of Survivor. Like,
yep.
Like, for in this era, at least. I don't know who's to say what kind of game she would have played and how she'd be remembered. But, like, in terms of, like, she had, like, the all the little components of, like, being a big breakout character potentially in this era of the show. And she just got cut so early.
Yeah, that's like Melinda, too. R.I.P. Mm-hmm. Melinda. I think
I love the salute. You, the viewers and listeners can't see, but Naomi saluted Melinda.
I honor my Melinda was what 32 or something.
32 year like, old older woman.
Get out of here.
I'm almost there.
29 and I just was like, shut the out. If Jeff Probst called me an older woman, I'd beat his ass. I just want to put that on the record. But you know, I think that Survivor would do this thing where they would cast these really interesting people and then tell us absolutely nothing about them, and then they would go home. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is one of the biggest shames of Survivor always, when people who are early vote outs go home and we don't know anything about them, even though clearly they have a story and that's why they're on. And that's why Jeff, you know, the all the supercuts of like Jeff Probst in like an E! News package talking about like, well, Aubrey's a nerd and so she's gonna do really well, or will she? And like just the worst looking footage of some poor MF on an island play with the sand. Like, we lose these people and they're embarrassed for Jeff Probst's entertainment, and we never get to know anything about them. And that's just to say that I stan Misty and Melinda so hard. And
the two M's.
Yeah, the M's. And Tina. But Tina's a whole other, like...
Oh, yeah.
Survivor's a fucked up game.
That Ponderosa so far, Timber Tina, Melinda, and Misty, I bet that'd be a good time.
That sounds like my kind of party, honestly.
I hope Melinda did some karaoke. You know, Misty did some missile engineering. Timber Tina chopped some wood for us, did some of her log rolling. Like, I'm sure they had a really good time.
Had a party.
Getting to the actual episode, the big news at Kasai at the start of the episode is that Bruce has arrived. And this scene, I forgot this scene was so funny, because Bruce is like, I am the most valuable person. She's, you know, the predecessor for Jamie Lynn Ruiz, saying I'm the most like valuable person they could have, most important person in the game. He's like ready to make his water filtration system, and Shane and Courtney instantly hate him for trying to make a cup give them clean water.
You know, you don't realize it until you see it, but he's kind of like a prior to Debbie Wanner in a way. Yeah. where he's like, I got this.
He's I'm an art teacher.
Yeah, and you're like, you're just an art teacher. Like, and he has a lot of wonderful elements to him as a person, but I love that he's like, no, you just strain it. And you just see Courtney in the background being like, I don't think that will get rid of all the bacteria. Now, mind you, Bruce can light a fire. He is good enough to light a fire, but that's not what he wants to do. That's not, he's not going to want to boil the water. Like, I wish people would go on Survivor with that much delusional confidence these days. I miss it.
And Shane calling Bruce incredibly neurotic is like...
It's the BlackBerry calling his cell phone. Like, it's like, girl... Yeah, the BlackBerry call is coming from inside the house.
The thinking stump is, like, just this episode alone, no, like, Bruce, and then just Bruce being like, everyone loves me, they think I'm a gift from heaven, and, like, most of Kasaya does, but, like, Courtney and Shane just being so instantly, like, fuck this dude for trying to help us, even he is,
which,
like,
is hilarious, and, you know, Bruce is in his own little world, but also, I'm such a Bruce stan, I'm a Bruce bestie.
Oh, we love Bruce.
Because I think he's such a funny character, and I really relate to, like, what he's feeling, which is like, I need to show how useful I am, or they will vote my ass out.
Exactly.
And instead, he just goes way too hard. And Shane also, so I, you know, I used to, I actually, funny enough, the internship I did was in marketing. And Shane is this marketing exec, and he's, you know, he's a guy who's so used to just being like, what I say goes, and I'm telling you what to do. And for him to have to reel that in while also fighting the demons of nicotine is just incredible. Like, watching somebody try to have self-control and then just, like, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde being taken over by cigarette smoke.
So, yeah, Bruce, he gets there. You know, he makes his impression. Then we cut to Lamina, and they're, like, eating snail stew and crab legs. They have no Bruce. They don't have this God's gift from heaven to show them how to filter their water. And then Nick catches a puffer fish, but you famously can't eat. Like, that's really dangerous. Like, you have, I'm sure you can't eat it. It has to be prepared very properly. So instead, they just eat Terry's tiny, tiny fish. And they're all very excited about Austin's, like, let's go. We got a little fish.
Yeah. You know what? Watching this episode made me think, like, oh, yeah, Terry was a pilot. And I'm just like, I hope he's my, you know how, like, you're kind of like, ooh, T-Bird flight attendant, when you're taking, like, a Delta flight? Like, I'm like, oh, I want Terry to be my pilot. Like, that to me is just, like, the dream is to get on a flight and be like, oh, my God, Terry.
What if it's Terry pilot, T-Bird flight attendant on that same flight?
Yeah, this feels like the memes where it's like, which table are you sitting at? And then it's like... the flight with Terry and T-Bird, or the flight with Ricard and whoever, you know, there's got to be a couple more pilots out there. Which flight you picking?
I'm going to look up and see Survivor pilots.
Yeah. Also,
oh, Terry comes up. That's it. Great. That's okay. I don't know if there's another pilot.
I don't know if this was already discussed, but how sad are you that they did not go with the name Bayonetta as, like, Lamina?
Right? Like, come on.
Also, somebody needs to Photoshop the Bayonetta flag next to Bayonetta from Smash. Yeah. Just, you know, I think that needs to be done, but it's not going to be me.
Bayonetta was the coolest name, and they just, you know, like, especially the Kasaiyan Bayonetta, like, the purple and the blue would have been really pretty. I know, I'm sure they try to go with more contrasting colors, but I have some notes on there. Yeah, like, what's the story?
What does Lamina mean?
What does Kasaya mean?
Lamina in English. Leaf. God damn it.
Leaf. So Urban Dictionary says Kasaya is a simp, but will stick with the guy for a long time. I don't think that's.
I like that you went to Urban Dictionary and I went to Google Translate.
No, I went to Google and the first thing that came up was Urban Dictionary.
Yeah, I don't think Kasaya is translating into anything. Yeah. Which is funny. Or the mine? The gold. There's a lot of translations of Lamina.
All right.
Or the hottie. Okay.
According to Bobby, Kasaya means the golden girl. So I think we should just continue calling this the Golden Girls tribe regardless. Ooh, we should classify each member of Kasaya as a golden girl. That'd be fun.
Also that the Spice Girls, like, you know, George thought he was so original on Survivor, Australian Survivor, calling people the Spice Girls, but actually it was Bob Dog. You're too late, George.
Do you want to talk about the reward challenge? I'm kind of leaving it up to my guests how much we care to talk about the challenges, because the immunity challenge is great. We will be talking about that.
Yes. I just love, like, I love the core concept of Survivor being like, okay, this is a game about surviving. And then you see challenges that are like, catch! You know? If you're like an adult and you're out there and Jeff Probst is like, okay, you got to catch this ball and I'll give you things that will save your life out here. And you're like, I hate you. I don't want to be, I just really admire when Survivor kind of goes very, very low budge. And this is one of those challenges. That's all I really have to say about it.
That's a really good way to put it. They're just like playing catch with like a giant slingshot.
Yep.
Yeah, but the reward's pretty good. They get like a lantern, like water containers, blankets, pillows, rope, and a tarp. Like, this is a pretty OP reward for catch.
Yeah, how do you use the word nerfed in context? Like, that, what, never mind. Like, Sandra stealing supplies nerfs the other tribe.
Yeah. My other note was, like, when they're talking about, like, how Kasaya's doing now that Bruce has joined. I think Aris calls Bruce dog. I believe he did, unless I'm hearing things. But I just thought that was funny. Because Bobby's also called Bob dog. So was it like, all right, he's Bob dog, he's Bruce dog.
Right.
You know, we got the two Bs, got to have the dogs.
And that nickname is being delegated to Bruce via the 24-year-old kid from Santa Monica.
Yes. as it should be. So Lamina wins the reward. Lamina's so dramatic about sending Bruce back to exile. They're like, huddle up, like, we got to do it. They're going to crumble without him, man. It's like so much.
But also, like, how strongly the Kasaya reacts to it.
I know, they do.
I think it's like, that's like one of the most fucked up things I've ever seen. Like, she's so, I mean, Cordy's always personally offended, but she's so offended by that decision. I love it.
No, it's funny because I was like, when they were doing that, I was like, okay, they're being a bit much. And then I saw Kasaya, I was like, oh no, I guess they are. Like, that is the impact of what they're doing.
I have a question, early Survivor question for you,
right,
which is, one of my favorite things that I don't think gets talked about a lot is the luxury items.
Mm.
So if you went on Survivor, what would your luxury item be?
Ooh. Oh, gosh. I'm definitely going to have to edit out some of this time where I'm thinking.
I'll tell you mine. Mine's chapstick.
Go for yours.
I'm bringing chapstick.
Oh.
I would be furious. If my lips were, like, drying out there, I would never be able to sleep. I would be, like, cranky and whatever. But if I have chapstick, I'll fall asleep. I'll be fine.
Unfortunately, I have chronic neck pain, and I'm wearing one of these like disposable like neck heaters that you just like tape to your body, and I unfortunately would need to have that if I was ever going on Survivor.
Like those microwavable like neck things.
Oh, my neck beans.
Put it in the pot.
Yes,
like my mom has, so they put it around your neck.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Unfortunately, as someone who's recently diagnosed with a degenerative disc disease in the cervical spine, that would have to be my luxury item. But it would feel nice, like, especially if it was cold and raining, my neck would be all like, ooh.
That'd be great.
Yeah, so I think that would have to be it. And that'd be very practical. So, yeah, I think that'd have to be it. So Lamina is very happy about their tarp. They're very, very happy about their tarp. Like, this is a game changer. And then it instantly starts to rain. So good for Lamina, but poor Bruce. Bruce is
brutal.
He can't even look for the idol because it's like raining so hard.
Well, he can't even look for the idol because Jeff Probst has said, it's not here. It's not there. Oh my God. I just love that the producers were like, I guess maybe their goal was for it not to be found in the first episode, because when Misty landed there, they said, hey, Misty, go F yourself. And then when Bruce landed there, they said, it's not here. Okay, moving on.
It's so jarring, but like refreshing to watch seasons where the idols are hard to find.
Like, yeah, and there's one.
There's one.
Un. Yeah.
No, like, not to keep talking about Survivor Quebec, but they actually, like, Survivor Quebec, it's the first season they're right now, and they actually hid the immunity idols at the camps really well. Like, it took, like, multiple days, and people needed, like, multiple clues to find them, and there's, like, some actual suspense as to whether it was found or not. It's like, God, what a concept. Now they just, like, walk around and touch trees.
As opposed to, like, Australian Survivor, who's like, we're gonna hide a thing that looks like a 3D printed idol in a cookie jar, but it's not the idol, and it's supposed to tell you that the idol is somewhere around here. Like, everyone's out of their minds in idols these days, so I'm glad to hear Quebec is keeping it fresh.
the one normal thing Quebec does. Very excited for the finale of Survivor Quebec. By the time this comes out, it will be out.
Yeah, when's the Bryce and Wen Quebec watch finale?
They
watch
better. I will bring them to Montreal. Like, I will.
How do you say present in French?
Présente.
Yeah, Bryce and Wen present.
Bryce et Wen présent. I can be their friend, like, it's only, like, some bilingualism going on there, especially right. The only laws we got going on, so, like, I can be their French MC. I should not talk about Quebec language stuff. I do not want to get into that. I do not. That is a bad thing for me to get into. Chibilong! You guys can't get mad at me. Okay.
Now that they've all closed their laptops and logged off. Yeah.
Okay, so this is the real meat of the episode. This is the great scene of the episode. This is, like, when I got to the, I was watching, I was like, God, what even happens in this episode? I knew something crazy must happen because it's called Crazy Fight Snake Dinners, but I couldn't remember what happened. And then I saw Shane's thinking seat and then it all flooded back to me. So I don't really understand why they started yelling, why Shane and Courtney started yelling. She kind of, was it just because she made a joke about his thinking seat?
So I think that a lot of what people don't see on Survivor, from what I've experienced in, like, watching sort of live reality games and all this, is that there's a lot of just, like, should we do this? Should we do this? I think we should do, like, everyone's got an opinion, an idea, a conception of what they should do. And everybody's watching you execute something to say, like, I think you did that wrong. And so what I was observing is that they're, like, fighting over, like, how the pot is being put in the fire. Mm-hmm. And Courtney's trying to do it, and Shane's telling her she's doing it wrong, but he also doesn't want to do it because he doesn't want to do everything for everyone. And he's, like, freaking out. And, you know, he wanted to get voted out last episode, right? Like, he's just rebounding so hard from his nicotine that he, I think, cannot stand the way that people are talking around him. And so it's all these stupid little, like, I don't know, should we move it from the fire? Should we put it in the fire? Should we blow? And I think he just totally exploded.
Yeah, so it's just, like, really more just, like, the build. Like, I mean, he's already, like, on such, like, a short fuse.
Thin ice.
Like, he arrived and the ice was, like, already completely shattered. Shane just, like, sitting on his thinking stump, screaming at Courtney about, like, get, like, he's, like, this is my seat. Like, it's just, like, these are adults. This is what I love about Survivor. These are adults. Like, one of my favorite fights is the Vanuatu fight between Twyla and Mia about, like, chores. Like, these are grown adults just, like, fighting about chores. Like, these are grown adults fighting about, like, a pot, fighting about the thinking seat. And it's just, what other show do you get to see, like, people devolve in this way?
It's also so funny, and, you know, I can almost see where Shane is coming from, right, with the, like, this is my chair, nobody else touch it, like, I want my own things on an, you know, we go through life not really having to share with many people, and suddenly when you can't really be seen as greedy or they'll vote you out and you have to be as altruistic as possible, I think somebody like Shane, who is in an environment where you're as cutthroat as possible, probably, like, snaps a little bit and having to be very nice to other people he doesn't like. And I was just always blown away by Shane when I watched this season, and it's because he's so angry at other people. For things that are, like a toddler. I want this chair. It's mine. Don't take it. This is my chair. My thinking chair. But also somebody needs to Photoshop him into Blue's Clues, I think.
Elaborate on that.
Do you know the thinking chair?
Oh, yeah. I forgot. I grew up on Blue's Clues, but I forgot it was called the thinking chair.
Yeah. Gotta sit in a thinking chair.
Thinking chair. He needs to upgrade his thinking stool to his thinking chair.
Yeah, or put him in Rodin, like make him like a Rodin sculpture. Yeah, like either the thinker, one.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's again not going to be me, but good, you know, somebody else knows Photoshop out there.
And so Aris, this is like the moment where Aris is truly, Aris and Suri are just like truly reckoning with the tribe they are stuck on. Like Aris, yeah. Like, I'm in alliance with three nutballs, is it Aris' exact words.
Is now the time to say, I'll save it. I love that quote from Suri where she's like, you're in an alliance and you hate each other.
Yeah, I know.
That perfect, perfect Suri, like, I'm reading your ass for filth. Like, she can see you exactly for who you are. And listen, I've met Suri a couple times.
Jealous.
She's the nicest person in the world. And she's so funny. But, like, she will tear you down. You know, if she can see that you deserve to be torn down, she'll tear you down. And these people deserve to be torn down, torn to shreds.
No, it's like last episode, she says it with like the same cadence of, if someone wants to quit, let them quit. Like she says it like the exact same way of like, what are we doing here?
Yeah. And she's right. You know, it's funny. We rarely see characters in the game who identify so clearly like the Friendships Alliance or the like who have the power to actually like destroy them mm-hmm. and take them down. Mateship baby. And I think Suri is one of those people who has the ability to not only see that the alliance is crumbling, see that these people are delusional for working with each other, but then also, you know, like therefore sort of advance herself with it.
Mm-hmm. No, this is like music to her ears to see this happening because Suri is like technically on the bottom of this tribe right now. You know, we obviously don't know where Bruce stands because he's just arrived and apparently we hate that he's helpful.
Bruce is never on the tribe.
He's like, yeah, oh yeah, he's gone now. I forgot he was there for like literally like 12 hours, not even.
Pit stop, yeah.
So this is music to her ears. And then I have another quote from Shane from this scene. Courtney is a lunatic and I'm trapped with her because I made a commitment on my son's life. This is like the funniest part. Like, he is like, well, I said this, so like I simply must be here with these people I do not like.
I love the people who said like, yeah, I swore on my family. Too bad I don't care. That's my favorite kind of reality TV character. Mm-hmm. The people who agonize over the fact that like, I swore on my parrot's grave. Not parent, parrot, I want to say. Like, parrot's grave that I like wouldn't vote you out and now I'm like totally torn. Like, you know, the Brandon Hanson of it all. Although, okay, Zach Wurtenberger is totally correct. Survivor South Pacific is an fascinating season because people are grappling with that concept of like, how can I go back on my word? But then they always go back on it, right? They
yeah.
never try to be the holier person. They always go back on their word. And that's what I think is so interesting. South Pacific, my friends and I did a rewatch in quarantine and I think it's a really interesting season.
Yeah, no,
but also
I
Survivor
would...
Nicaragua is interesting too. Sorry.
Oh, okay. You're a Nicaragua like defender.
Yeah, Maddie G, baby. Yeah, the Nicaragua. I mean, I love
Maddie
Fabio,
G.
But...
Yeah.
I just think Nicaragua, we talk about it on an episode of Mike It Was Rob, but like, it's a really compelling season when you realize that it's like a lot of unlikable people kind of slowly realizing that they're also surrounded by unlikable people. And seeing Jeff Probst get mad is one of my favorite things. I love when Jeff Probst's dreams get broken.
Okay, this is a good take. This is a good take.
Yeah, I like seeing him pissed off at people because it shows that, like, yeah, you can put these people on an island and they're going to rebel against your, like, your patriarchy, man. Like, screw you and Mark Burnett. Like, we're going to do what we got to do.
If Jeff's having a good time, I'm having a bad time. And if Jeff's having a bad time, I'm having a fantastic time.
If Jeff Probst has 100 haters, I'm one of them. If Jeff Probst has one hater, it's me. If Jeff has no haters,
I'm dead.
Like... have you seen the photo of I talked about this on the Bitter Jurors, but the no hate photo of Jeff Probst?
No, I'm sure I've seen it at some point, but hold, I need to.
Yeah, just look up Jeff Probst no H8.
Jeff.
It's my favorite meme. There's also a Jerry Manthe one apparently.
Oh, he's like doing a finger gun. Oh, that's his face. He looks so airbrushed.
Yeah, whoever did the no hate campaign was like. I'm convinced that they were a time traveler sent back to 2008 to be like, what can be the most cringe internet pictures for so many different people? I will do them now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you can buy it from the website. if you want a 40-inch by 40-inch, the maximum size, that's the maximum size you can get it for $624. The cheap.
Oh my God.
You can just get a small one. The smallest one you can get for $20. So if you want this, you can own this.
I think it would be a really funny bit to get survivors to sign that. Yeah. Sign that photo.
His is right next, and the website, his is right next to Eliza Dushku, which I love to see. I'm a big fan of Eliza Dushku. As someone who watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer when I was in high school. Anyway.
Check out Buffy Boyfriends.
What is Buffy Boyfriends. Very good podcast. Do love Buffy
the Vampire Slayer. Plug on the network.
I will be the Faith Lehane correspondent in season 3 because she is one of my favorite characters. Anyway, this is not the Faith Lehane
sorry,
fan podcast, but we love a tangent. Now, like, Zach and I went on so many tangents last time. This is like nothing. And I even like cut some of them down because we talked so long. But that's what I love about doing this podcast, because we just end up talking about random shit.
Can I bring something that is very on topic to the table? Why can't Jeff Probst say Ceree's name right? He's like been struggling for 3 episodes now. What the hell?
So what pronunciations did you hear this episode? I didn't note this. I noted it. I remember hearing it in previous episodes.
He said, like, it's in the reward challenge, I think, when she's pulling. He says, like, Ceree or something. Like, he says it close but not correct. And I'm just like, what? You know, it's funny, he actually doesn't do what I noted in the premiere, is he doesn't do the man in the yellow shirt, what's your name? He actually just goes, Ceree. Like, he points at her.
Yeah.
He talks to her, and he talks to, I think, Shane. And I think it's so funny that he's messing up her name, considering that, like, the back of his, she is, like, one of the Mount Rushmores of his franchise, right? He's biffing her name for 3 episodes.
Like, well, I mean, same with Parvati. Like, even in Micronesia, he was still saying it wrong. I mean, growing up, I thought her name was Poverty, because, like, that's how he said it, like, so much. And it's just so funny that Ceree and Parvati have, like, become such legends. It's like, famously, Jeff could not pronounce their names.
That's the real, you know, go by your last name, forget it. Jeff Probst biffs your name on
you're a winner.
For 10 episodes. You're a winner. Also, I have in my notes, love the 2000 swimsuits, so Kohl's.
Mm.
Like, all of the swimsuits in this season are just, like, they really went to Target and went off, you know, like, the flowers, the halter two-piece. It's some great stuff.
What? Who wins your, like, swimsuit competition?
I think that the ugliest swimsuit is by far Danielle's. I think Ceree's in a close second, but I think that I actually really like Courtney's swimsuit.
I'm going to be honest, the people at home, we just had a very scary moment where I thought we lost my, like, I had an technical issue and I thought we lost the first 30 minutes of this podcast, but she's still here.
That's like the moment where we're like, folks at home, I know that was scary. We were scared. You know, Tyra, who was scared?
I'm scared. I was scared. But as you can hear, as you know, the podcast exists. We're fine. We got through it. I believe that Naomi's swimsuit takes were just too hot, you know, because they kicked us off the platform. So at Lamina, Misty is doing her best proto-Parvati to flirt with the younger men, which is Nick and Austin, the most forgettable men in world history. And Misty says, I didn't come out here to sit on my rump, which is an excellent turn of phrase.
very Texas, you know.
And then we see Sally, you know, it's like, you know, Misty's really smart. She's like, Misty is smart because she, like, knows how she can play the game. And Sally's like, I can't play the game like that. She's like, in quote, I'm the pal. What's up, guys? Let's hang out. Which is like, she's basically like, I'm from the Midwest. I can't compete. Like, I'm from Minnesota. Like, you know, like, I'm not that girl.
But it's also very much like a lesbian friend, yeah. Right? Where it's like, hi. Like,
she's hey, you know, mamas.
Your friend's flirting with the guys and you're just like, hey, what's up, dudes? Like, nice to meet you.
No, she's hey.
Don't come near me.
She's hey, yeah. The hey mamasing the men on the tribe. But they basically are our Southern queen and our Hey Mama's Minnesota girl decide to come with their, you know, their plan. Okay, this is our foursome with the boys. We're going to control this tribe. And, you know, we'll see how that pans out for them in this very episode. It's very short-lived, unfortunately. Do you have any other, anything else you want to say about these Lamina dynamics? Because I know you're big fan of Misty. I mean, we'll get more of them because we got Tribal Council, but anything here?
Yeah. I don't think, I just think it's funny how everyone's still really mad about the spear. That cracks me up. Where, like, they literally...
By everyone, you mean, like, Terry? You know,
it's like Terry and, like, Austin, I think, or Nick. Truly, they are the same person to me, Austin and Nick. But where they're both just like, well, if we had the spear, we maybe have more fish. And you're just like, bro, let it go. Like, get over it. Build a bridge over the Fijian Ocean and get over it.
Yeah, like, I do feel so bad for Sally. Like, you know, like, Terry's, like, sulking in camp, like, openly, you know, making it very clear, you know, when he caught that little fish, or, like, that I could have caught a bigger one if we still had the spear. Like, you just know he's, like, doing his passive-aggressive. I don't want to assume, but he seems quite upset about the spear, and I don't think he would hide it. So this immunity challenge is chef's kiss. This is the kind of stuff I wish we still did get to see on Survivor. I get that it's a little dangerous to have people just like Fight Club in the sand. But this is one of the challenges to me that is Survivor. It's the, you know, like the, I don't know if that's, what's the name for it. It's not Sumo at Sea, but it's just like wrestle in the sand and dig up a bag. It's the, you know, heroes versus villains opening challenge. And this is a fun one. This is a fun one.
I wrote in my notes, a sandbag competition with Suri where nobody's boobs come out, a shame. So we're all watching this, like, I remember one. But this is such a funny challenge. I love the strategy, because I actually do think that this challenge does involve strategy, right? Is it, you know, do you hold back? Because all you have to do is be touching the bag and get it to the mat. You don't even get to the mat. You don't even need to, like, have the bag on the mat. You don't need to be in sole possession of the bag. You just got to touch. So where do you stand, and how do you handle it? I do get a little uncomfortable. I think the older I get, the more I'm like, Survivor really shouldn't be like people, like, actually trying to F each other up and, like, push each other and shove each other off of things. But I think early Survivor really loved that, like, physical competitiveness. Totally. But the women's rounds are always so interesting to me, because it'll just be like men being like, sit on her. You're like,
Bruce.
Oh my God.
Bruce literally, like, yells,
this is a mother.
Sit on her, Suri. Like, this is a mother. This is my mother.
The woman has children. Like, yeah, it's my mom.
You know, it's really funny. You do just get to see, like, oh, RS also says, use that karate, Bruce, which I think is very funny. He's going to, like, throat chop them. Like, oh God, no, it's very funny to see people really devolve into this, like, literal, like, this, like, base, like, just like, fuck her up. Like, we don't care. And it's like, I'm on the same page. It's like, I wish we got to see stuff like this more often, but, like, I think it's for the best, because we've seen some really crazy potential injuries and actual injuries come from these types of challenges. Schmergen Brawl. It's one of the most poorly thought out challenges in Survivor history.
I love that when it's like, I love when Survivor is like, should we have a bunch of, like, you know, like the Bobby Johns and what's his faces of the world going at it, and you're just like, should we have the most, like, aggressive, like, competition, like, where people are pushing each other? Like, should we just have that happen for $1 million?
Yeah.
Nobody's gonna be restrained. It makes me laugh, but I do like this. I actually do really like this challenge, and this is, I think, if Peridium ever runs out of ideas, he should do, like, the top 10 most satisfying, like, challenge wins after lots of challenge losses, because this is one of those where I was like, bro, if Kasaya goes, Suri's absolutely toast. And, like, instead be like, oh my God, like God has listened to me, the seas have parted, and you can see that, you know, they don't lose. This is a really sad.
Like, I'm scared as to what would have happened if, like, they hadn't won. Like Shane would have, like, if Shane had to go to tribal twice in a row after his emotional state the past couple of days, I would have been very scared for everyone going to that tribal.
Yeah, I think they probably would have voted her.
Like, there's
a
non-zero chance. I wonder, like, if he, like, really went. Kept on that energy, like he just got into a couple big fights with everyone. I know, I agree there. I had that thought watching. It's like, it's not impossible that Shane would go here, either asking to go or his alone alliance just being like, you know what, we're sick of him. I forgot that Misty gets in trouble here. Missile Misty gets like scolded by Jeff. He had Thailand flashbacks.
Yeah. No, Chung.
Thailand flashbacks, the attack zone debacle. Because Misty like puts like Aris in a chokehold and someone else gets in trouble. I didn't make note of who it was, but someone else gets in trouble for some illegal move in Jeff's eyes. Oh, it's the kicking. Someone was kicking too much.
Oh. I said, I can't believe a whacked out, cigarette-less Shane Powers didn't beast mode this challenge out. Like, I'm shocked he didn't, like, access a part of himself that's like, if I can't have nicotine, I will have violence and, like, go to the end. But he, you know, he was really funny in this challenge, though. Like, I do love when people on the sidelines are really mouthy. Like, what's that one challenge where somebody's like, punch her in the face or something, and everyone's like, punch her in the face, and they're like, I didn't say that. What are you talking? Like,
well,
I can't remember.
The big
what
one
that
is Courtney Yates yelling, "Break her shoulder," and then looking really.
That's it. That's it.
Break her shoulder, and she like looks very like, "Oops!" like I didn't say that. No, yeah, that's the big one.
That makes me laugh. That makes me laugh so much.
Oh my God! So, There's some fun back and forth here. Like, it is a close challenge. Shane almost scores. Austin pulls him over. Aris dives with the bag, which could have gone very poorly for him. Like, that seemed like kind of a stupid thing to do in a physical game. And then the final matchup is Bobby and Danielle versus Ruth Marie and Terry. And yeah, Ruth Marie, she's not a smasher, and she is not a bag grabber, because she does get the bag, but Bobby just like picks her up by like her collar like she's a kitten and like drops her on his mat. That's gotta be so humiliating.
Oh my God, it's so, and like the way that Bobby just kind of like discards her. I mean, I feel really bad for Ruth Marie. It's not her fault, but the way that she's like running and she's just like, you
like
know,
Tom and Jerry.
Yeah, you know that in like Monsters Inc. 2, Monsters University, pardon me, where like the guy's like, I'm gonna run really fast to class, and he's just like a little slug going like 2 inches a second. Like, that's what Ruth Marie looked like. It was so funny. Felt really bad for her.
No, it's like she's quite small. She couldn't find that. This is why it was like later on when they were like talking about like, when Lamine is talking about who to vote out, they're like, well, Misty sucked in the challenge. It's like, Ruth Marie, Ruth Marie literally lost you the challenge. I didn't notice Misty doing particularly poorly.
Yeah, I wonder if it's like an attitude thing almost. Like, at least Ruth Marie was always willing to try, right? At least she was ready to start.
At least Ruth Marie didn't try to choke out our single, like, make us lose a point. No, I don't know. I think it was maybe like a...
Yeah, that's not a bro. How could you choke
I think it was probably, probably more of like a perception thing that, like, you know, like, because Ruth Marie took on, like, the bigger, like, hero role at the end, that it, you know, gave the impression that she was contributing more, even though she still, like, lost them the challenge. Yeah, so it's... Yeah, the logic of, like, I mean, obviously there's more reason to it. They're, like, threatened by Misty, and I feel like they were just more looking for a reason here to, like, justify, well, why we should keep Ruth Marie. Because they're like, Ruth Marie's overall weaker, but did better in this challenge than Misty, so by virtue we should keep her. It was just kind of not great logic.
No. Empty heads.
Empty
no
heads. So yeah, it's really, this vote is not like particularly, I mean, it's still like kind of crazy that Misty went here just on like looking on like paper, it like should not have been Misty based on like Ruth Marie overall being weaker and Misty being younger and, you know, the bias against older women in Survivor historically. So it is interesting that Misty went here, but it just kind of comes down to the dudes being like, oh yeah, the dudes will be dude out and we want to keep Ruth Marie.
Yeah, you know, another aspect I think is really interesting about this tribe, about Lamina, is that it's like you have Dan and Terry, you have Ruth Marie on her lonesome, you have Austin and Nick, and you have Misty and Sally. And essentially you have three groups of two that are all interested in working with one other group of two, but not like, but there's no overlap, not no overlap, but like, there's no like, oh, the girls want to work with the older men, but the older men want to work with the, they all want to work with the younger men. And rather than pick off Ruth Marie, who's just like the straggler amongst the seven of them, they instead target one of the other groups of two. And I think that's really interesting Survivor in terms of like, am I targeting somebody who I, and you know, they, I think they do talk about it a little bit about Misty, that she is a little bit smarter and more social. And she's got like that, like she's sharper, not even more than Ruth Marie, but more than some of them, she's probably smarter than a lot of them. So do you keep around the smartest person, or do you keep around somebody who is like, you know, an older, nice lady? And I like that they made the Ruth Marie
choice. And she has fewer options for sure. Like Misty, if they're acknowledging, you know, Misty is a strong player, if they're, you know, witnessing this, you know, flirtatious strategy, they have to imagine like she's going to be able to like, well, integrate herself into any situation if they let this happen. But Ruth Marie, like, you know, Melinda's gone, like Tina's gone, you know, she has no other connection. So it is like, joking, all jokes aside about the challenge thing, it's in terms of numbers and like where people are at, it's not the worst move here, especially if they are genuinely threatened by Misty, which I believe they are, because she's like a young woman who is attractive and playing this particular kind of game that they can recognize as potentially being very effective.
Yeah, and you know, we haven't really coined it yet as the like the parvity of it all, of the like, oh my god, it's a brunette female and she's under the age of 25 and she's hot, like of the fears that people have on Survivor when it comes to women of that sort of archetype. But I think that that is probably still on people's minds at this point in time. And kind of the shitty thing about it is, like, you kind of want to look at these two absolute nothing men who are, like, just so lame and be like, well, who cares? I wish they'd vote you out instead. You suck.
Yeah, like, it really does feel like these, the younger men and the older men just came together on virtue of just, like, we're dudes. We're strong. We're boring. And it's unfortunate because like it's just like Nick and Austin are bringing so little to this tribe, and it just would have been so much more interesting to see them like explore their options a bit more. Like it just seems like they fully were like, no, we're going with the dudes for the sake of it. But RIP Misty.
Okay, I want to say that originally I had in my notes Misty for second chances. But while we were talking, I looked up Misty, and I have some bad news. She is following President Trump 45 archived, Donald J. Trump, Ivanka Trump, Mike Pence archived, Jared Kushner, Stacey Dash, and also very funny, the Dalai Lama, and also Lockheed Martin. Because if she wasn't a Republican, she is a missile engineer after all, which when you think about it now, you're like, oh wait,
this makes sense. I had
wait a minute, missiles, not like space missiles.
I had a similar tragic discovery of when checking up on Timbertina. Absolutely all of her Twitter likes are about trans people and groomers.
No. What is this, Survivor 43? Yeah,
we're going to get some people. No one who listens to this podcast cares about that, but I'm super against people being like, stop canceling Tina Shear.
she did with enough, and it's like, yeah, she did, and I feel bad, like, but like, you know, having trans people dealt with enough. She should
stop caring so much about trans people. No, her likes, if you want to be scared, look at her Timber Tina's likes. It was, because I was like, oh, maybe like it'd be fun to like reach out to her.
Misty's likes. This is gonna fuck. You know, it's always funny when you go through like a person's following list and you can just see like tons of like blocked on the side. Blocked, yeah. Blocked, blocked. Oh, no. You're like, oh my god. They're following so many things I've blocked. Oh no. Okay, she hasn't really favorited anything since 2020. At the very least, there's no like anti-COVID stuff, which is like, okay. Listen, out of all the things that could be there, we're gonna take one for the win. Of course, like, you know. One win, not much.
Yeah.
But you know, I think Misty was an interesting character, but I also think that this season really, one of the downsides of this season, because I don't think it's a boring season and I don't think it's a season with bad characters, but I think the split by age is really a hindrance because it forces you to just see them as like, okay, these are like the children. These are the young ladies and young women. And then on the other side, you said, oh, these are the older. But, you know, Shane talks about it in this episode. He's 35. Like, he's not, or is he 33? He's not old. He's just older. Yeah. And it immediately creates this gap in their relationship where there could be an interesting connection. And, you know, there is a lot of difference between someone who's 35 and someone who's 24, like him versus Aris, right? But instead of, like, the social experiment the Survivor is normally advertised as, is like people coming together across all walks of life. I think this is a season where when you look at it, I mean, it's like you have Bruce, you have Bob, you have Suri, and I believe you have no other people of color.
Yeah.
You just look at it and you're like, oh boy, the Survivor really knows how to be as limited on diversity as possible. And it's a shame. I think that this season and the way it starts really inhibits gameplay in this
pre-merge. I would agree.
And inhibits relationships.
I would agree because what it gets so interesting once we have the real Kasaya because we have everyone interacting. But like we still have, even though they only did the twist for one round, it still sets this narrative, like you said, and it gives people less room to play because then it's, if we had started out with two bigger tribes, everyone would have had a little more room to maneuver. Everyone would have had a little more time, like, to, like, get to know people. It just, this quick of a swap, I'm glad they did it, because that would have been really stagnant to have those four people crazy tribes. But it was, like, it didn't fix it. It fixes it in the sense that, we finally get to see these people interact. We finally get to see this great tribe. But it was kind of an irreversible thing to correct because it still sets the narrative of these are the starting tribes. These are who's bonding. These are where the alliances are going to fall. Thankfully, Kasaya makes that more interesting by Shane just showing up and being like, these are the people that are working together. I swear on my son's life. But if he hadn't done that, you know, season that's not so loaded with characters like we have on the Kasaya tribe, This could have been an even, like, you know, we talk about like Lamina being pretty boring. This, like, you know, this could have been a very stagnant season if we didn't have some people willing to just kind of just go all in on an alliance like, right away that made kind of no sense and then fight about it.
I also think that Survivor at this point in time, I think people have realized that alliances are important, but I don't think they've realized why alliances are important. It's not just to say, us four, let's vote together. And I think that will become clear as you go down the line. But I also think it's about like choosing the people you actually would like to work with. And when you're on a tribe of three or four, or you're like Suri and Melinda, who really can't get any footwork into the tribe, it really makes you think, well, wouldn't this have been better if we just started off in, you know, groups of four for a reward challenge or something, rather than the way that this is turned out.
Yeah, like this just makes me think of what we're talking about with like the modern Survivor issues of the smaller tribes. It just stifles the gameplay. And again, glad they did this swap, but just imagine if we had it just started with a schoolyard pick.
Yeah, my ideal Survivor season is very similar to like a David versus Goliath, or very similar to like a ghost island of like, not in outcome or in anything like that, but in the idea of like, okay, you have two groups of 10, two groups of 9, you swap once, you swap twice, you go to the merge. Like, you give everybody a chance to have a relationship. You maybe take larger tribes and put them into smaller tribes to really test relationships and test the groups of people and how they're forming. You give them opportunities to find idols, to save themselves, all these things. But at the same time, you push people to get out of their comfort zone, because there's nothing more boring than a group of 10 sticking together all the way through. Mm-hmm. Or a group of 6.
Yeah.
Going to 5, and then who cares? And then it's a 7-1-0 vote, and we all go home. We all go home, yay!
And then before we go home, we all have to eat pizza, and it's very uncomfortable.
Oh my god. Oh my god. I need to, like, do an ops mission and destroy all the tape of the finale so they're forced to do it live. And like, again, how Survivor South Africa did it so perfectly. Just the day after, right? The day after would be incredible. And instead they're like, you're on candid camera. What do you think about losing $1 million to people you consider close friends? Isn't that funny?
So do we have anything else to say about Misty before we send her off into the sunset to be a Republican on Twitter?
No, you know what? In retrospect, you know, I felt bad for her at the time. I think it's funny how many bug bites she got now.
Well, let me read Misty's final words, and then we will do our episode title selection and our plugs. So, Misty, well, tonight was definitely a shock to me. I didn't expect it so soon, that's for sure. I was excited and exuberant. That's a nice word, exuberant. I thought we had a great thing going. So obvious I was outplayed and out-strategized. I had a great time out here. I met some great, great people. And I wish my tribe all the luck. And I hope they go all the way. So she's not bitter. She did get pretty brutally played, brutally blindsided. Sally's left out of the vote. We'll have to see how she recovers from that. So it is, at least it's nice that we get an early vote. We've now had two, or last vote and this vote, non-unanimous pre-merge votes, which is always fun.
Something I appreciated is that I really got by the voting confessional. That was like, I think you're the weakest member of our tribe. And I was like, sayonara, Ruth Marie. and then it wasn't. And I was like, oh, damn, they got me. Yeah. Like, I thought for sure it was Ruth Marie going home this episode. But then I, you know, in my head, I was like, I know that Misty goes home pretty early. The one thing I do want to talk about in general is I love Astro Dan. I think he's such a funny character. I really wish that he could be brought back in some way, even though he's probably, you know, he's probably like my parents' age and he's probably a little bit too old to be out on the island again. But I think he's such a funny guy and he's got a great look to him and just a really compelling person. I love, one of my all-time favorite scenes of Panama, besides all the madness that is going to occur, is like Terry and him being like, okay, well, I have a little white lie. Do you want to go first? I'll tell you. That kills me, especially because they're both so connected to each other. You know, like, they both have been in sort of the stratosphere or whatever. I don't know. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a missile engineer. But I love that scene.
No, yeah, like, the like, gentleman's agreement. It is quite cute to see, like, they were, like, almost like little boys at the playground being like, all right, we're gonna be in it for the long haul. Now, I did think it was interesting that the two people you mentioned really loving were Astro Dan and Misty, because those are not usually the people list when they list, like, their favorite Panama characters, so I really admire that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have a newfound love for Danielle, I think, as the older I get, because she's so funny. You know, my boyfriend's from Boston, but she's just got that accent and she's just so young. She's like, I'm an athlete, that's what I do. And you're just like, oh, go off, queen. Like, you are just so good.
I am so excited. Like, part of the big appeal of doing this season is so I can pull out my Danielle impression. And we're not quite there yet, but there are a few Danielle lines that are just absolutely burned into my brain. Like, they're just, like, offhand things she says. She just, like, underrated Survivor accent. One of the greatest to ever do it. Very excited. Now, Danielle was someone, when I watched the season when I was younger, I remember, like, I don't remember watching season very much, but she did not stand out to me. You know, Heroes versus Villains, you know, first time I watched it, did not stand out to me. And then I rewatched, I was like, this woman is so fucking funny. And I think it's like, she's just like such an unexpected character for me, because she's someone like, I don't know, like, I just, this like, her like sporty Boston girl persona is so charming to me and so real. Like, it's like, I've definitely met women like this.
Yeah. I think she's so quintessentially New England, And I love her face. She's always got that, like, kind of like, you know, something smells bad face. And I love when Courtney, like, turns to her and she's like, did I do anything wrong? I don't think I did anything wrong. Also, Courtney. Yeah, Courtney is Courtney. I mean, there's something so entertaining about, like, the white girl with dreads on Survivor. And you know, she's won't be the last white girl with dreads on Survivor. And I think they really struck gold with Courtney, and I don't think they could ever recreate that magic, no matter how many bleach blonde dreadlocks they tried.
So it's time to pick our episode titles. So we'll put it in a poll. People will vote. It can be, you know, Naomi can pick something, be something really funny and silly. It can be something you think is genuinely a very good Survivor episode title. The choice is yours.
Okay. So I have two, but I imagine that maybe you've picked. I have, quote, I'm in an alliance with three nutballs, which I think is going to be my pick. But I also have, quote, Aris, bring me the bag. I told you to bring me the bag.
All right, so what you're going to lock in?
I'm in an alliance with three nutballs. Okay,
I'm going to go with Jeff saying one big game of Twister, because it's relevant to the challenge, but isn't Survivor like a game of Twister, Naomi? Wouldn't you say it's a social game of Twister?
You know, Christine, Survivor's like a game of Twister. You have your green spots, your red spots, your yellow spots, your blue spots, but sometimes you just need to find that different way to put your right hand on yellow. But if you look at it from a completely different perspective, you realize you can get there. And also, I want to play my shot in the dark.
Wow!
I don't know. That's my new era impression.
Wow! For the first time in Survivor,
I know. I texted this. Brian Cohen has a really funny tweet about it, too. But I texted this to my friend when I was just watching New Era Survivor. Like, Jeff Probst always acts like he's being told how Survivor works for the first time when people give him an answer. Wait, you think this is, like, really hard? And it's, like, lying to, like, your friends?
And when people are, like, saying a metaphor to him or an analogy, he, like, looks like you're, like, he's, like, you're dangling, like, shiny keys in front of him, like, his face when people talk. It's, like, he's so easily impressed and amused these days. And then you watch these old seasons and people can be, like, saying whatever. Like, you can watch old seasons of Survivor, see people openly fighting at tribal council, and he's just, like, dead, like, stone-faced.
I'll be here all night. I don't care. I'm the ropes. Like, no hate.
No hate. A lot of hate.
A lot of hate.
But with love. Hate with love. So, Naomi, any last thoughts before we wrap up on this episode?
Well, first of all, I'm glad to be here. Honored to be here, frankly. I love the bitter jurors. I just think that early-ish Survivor needs a recognition. Is like, it's compelling to watch people in these situations, and I really can't wait. I'm going to keep watching Panama, honestly. You know, some people watch and then give up. I'm going to keep watching Panama. I'm having a great time. Justice for Bruce. Justice for Bob Dog. Justice for Dan. No justice for Misty. We've retconned that. And, you know, great season. I'm glad you're doing this.
Thank you. No, this is so fun to have you, because we've definitely followed each other on Twitter for a minute, and I've been like, really want to podcast with Naomi at some point, and this was the perfect opportunity. So glad you're so down and ready to jump on an early episode too.
Yeah, I was psyched. I love getting it out of the way. I was really psyched when you asked me, and I'm honored to follow Zach Wurtenberger. And I also was supposed to be on Survivor 41 before it got canceled by COVID.
Me too.
Or am I? Yeah, it's like I was at Stonewall. Like, I was on Survivor 41 before COVID. Okay, I'll close this out. I'll tell a Suri story. Okay, so I helped Suri and Michaela in the pandemic do like a Zoom charity event for Survivor. And Coach played trumpet, of course, and it was really interesting. I think Danielle was also there. But so I helped Suri with that, and then I saw Suri in person, and Suri was like, I remember you from Zoom. And I was like, I've never in my life been more honored to be recognized from anything for anyone for any reason. Like, I just felt so blessed that Suri would remember me. And she is such a sweetheart. And I just think that she deserves the world. And also, the fact that she smoked everyone's asses on Traitors is so fucking funny. And that's all I have to say, is I stand Suri till the day I die.
Suri's the best. So, Naomi, where can people find you?
I'm actually pretty terrible at pugging myself, so I'm going to try and do
Okay.
this properly with real emphasis because I work hard on my podcasts. Okay. There's the Mike White Was Robbed podcast, which is available on all platforms. I actually talked to literal Mike White. So if you haven't heard that episode, it's my pinned tweet. And I'm on Twitter at Naomi Calhoun. I also co-produce a Survivor live reality game called Survivor New York, which is coming back in August of this year. So stay tuned at Survivor New York on Instagram and Facebook. I also talked about the Genius Netherlands on Silent Podcast. I'm on Silent Podcast all the time. We talked about the Genius Netherlands, Top Chef 19, Project Runway 19, and we're going to be talking about Project Runway All Stars 20. Not All Stars like Alyssa Milano All Stars. All Stars like this is really interesting All Stars. And I'm super excited with the lovely Gia and Nicole Horn. So check us out everywhere and anywhere and all the time and forever. And I appreciate you.
Awesome. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at TheXteenFiles. You can read my writing on Inside Survivor. It's the off season, so I won't be doing much there this summer, but I will following some time following the finale of Survivor Quebec, which has happened if you're listening to it. I will be writing a review of the season. So if you can't watch the season for whatever reason and you're interested to hear about the latest Survivor franchise, it did get renewed for a second season, so we will be getting some more in the future. So if you're interested to hear about how it's going and what they're doing, I will be writing about that. It's been a very interesting season. You can listen to the Bitter Jurors podcast, our Twitter at Bitter Jurors Pod. You can listen to the Shadow Play Gaze, which is me and Derek Reinings' podcast about the anime revolutionary girl Utena. We have promised we'll be doing the musicals this summer, so keep an eye out for that. Adjacent to the Shadow Play Gaze, if you're into that, if you're into Utena or old school Sega Saturn games, me and my friend Audrey are currently playing through the Utena Sega Saturn game. If you check the Bitter, excuse me, check the Shadow Play Gaze Twitter account, I'm posting links to that. We are currently starting our playthrough of the worst ending you can get, where you have no friends. So we're doing our loser run. So if you want to watch a fun, very interesting visual novel, regardless of you seeing Utena, watch that. That's everything. Thank you again, Naomi. This was such a pleasure. I'm so glad our audio did not disappear from planet Earth. And I hope you had a good time.
That was amazing. It would have been devastating, frankly, to lose that early stuff. I don't think I could ever be that funny
So,
again, so I'm glad it still exists. I'm privileged to be here. Thank you so much.
we'll be back next week with episode 4, Starvation and Lunacy. Some guests who did appear on Stanuatu, some good friends of mine. So we'll be back next week, and just a reminder that after next week, I'll be going on vacation because I'll be in Iceland.
Ooh.
We'll be after next week. We'll be taking a week off, but see you next week for episode 4, Starvation and the Lunacy. Goodbye.